your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
As usual, a little later in the show, I'll invite you to call in for a workover if you've got a work-related problem, especially if you're still not sure what you want to be when you grow up, even if you're ostensibly quite grown up. I'll invite you to call. So get your questions ready. I do what I call workovers. But first, I gave a talk 2 weeks ago at UC Berkeley on time management. And what generated the most enthusiasm was the concept of the voice. I explained that many of my most successful clients and those who are most contented with their life have a little voice that's ever whispering in their ear asking these four questions. I'll simply list the four questions first and go back and describe them. Should I do the task? To what level of perfectionism? How could I make it more pleasant? And what's my first baby step? Let's go back to the first one, which is, should I do the task at all? Is that task consistent with my core values, or at least something that simply has to get done, like my taxes? Or is it something that I really can forego, deciding there are better uses of my time? Or would it be wise to delegate it to a supervisee, to an intern, to a personal assistant I hire, if only for a few hours a week, to do things like errands, house cleaning, waiting for the repair person? So that first question is, first, really being quite conscious of, should I do the task at all? I don't think everybody is as conscious as they need to be about that question. Should you do it? And if you have to do it, can you delegate at least part of it to a supervisee, an intern, a personal assistant? The second question that the voice is ever, that successful people are ever asking themselves is, to what level of perfectionism? If you've decided you want to do the task, you don't have just one speed. It's like driving a car. Do you want to do it as fast as possible, at normal speed, or do you need to go very slowly? That gas pedal metaphor, I think, is appropriate. So the second question that people who are high achievers and can manage their time well, and they're the kind who we say, how in the world did he or she get so much done? It's these four questions, that voice in their ear, excuse me, whispering these four questions that can, excuse me, make all the difference. The third question is, how can I make the task more pleasant? That is, can there be a more fun way to do it? Like, let's say you've got to prepare a report. Instead of automatically saying, oh, I know I'm supposed to pore over this mountain of data, should I interview a few people? It might be more entertaining as well as more enlightening. While doing the task, should I be listening to Pump It Up music? Should I make it a game, like, let's see if I can reach that milestone by noon? Should I team up with somebody? Like, maybe I would actually exercise 5 days a week if I scheduled a daily run or a hike with my friend after work, say at 6 o'clock every day. And so that's the third question. How could I make the job more pleasant so I'm less likely to procrastinate? And the fourth question that the voice is ever whispering in the ears of my more successful clients and friends, and that is the cliched, what is my first baby step? Sometimes the hardest part is getting started. But if instead of viewing that big project as a mountain, you only ask yourself, what's my first baby step? That might not feel so daunting. And having taken a few baby steps, you might be up and rolling. Now, I, of course, acknowledge that time management cannot be reduced to one tip, the voice. But the attendees at my talk, as well as many of my clients, okay, me too, find the voice inordinately helpful in getting more of what we want done in less time, gaining more control of our time. A couple of other things I think I should also mention, you know, in addition to the voice. There is something that I call the moment of truth. There is a moment, usually unconscious in people who are not good time managers, when they're feeling uncomfortable about doing the task. They're thinking about, oh, I really should prepare for that meeting. I really should write that. I really should. Again, I asked for an extension on my taxes and I still haven't gotten started. There is that moment that we all, by nature, tend to want to be more comfortable. And we default viscerally to doing something more pleasant. I think I need to, even if it's, you know, clean the kitchen, it's more rewarding, it's more concrete. you feel better about that than the pain of doing something hard. Of course, there are going to be times we procrastinate, but it is really helpful if you really do want to gain more control of your time to be vigilant for that moment of truth, to make it conscious rather than unconscious, whether you do want to have a good time or whether you're deciding that the pain of that short-term project is going to yield enough long-term benefit, or at least avoid some horrible outcome, like if you don't pay your taxes, they cart you off to jail, that you motivate yourself to do it. They're probably not going to cart you off to jail, but they'll charge you penalties up the yin-yang. And then the final thing, and this is softer, some people are motivated by much more gentleness in motivation. So the reality is that even many, I'll say some or many, very successful, time-effective people, people who are good at managing their time, getting a lot done, screw up. Will take, and it's usually not days, but they'll take an hour that they know they should be working and they just can't resist doing something pure fun when they know they should be working. In the end, it really is like a 12-step program with alcoholism. It is two steps forward, one step back. You've got to forgive yourself. As the 12-step saying goes, one day at a time. Or I would rather say, 1 minute at a time. If you screwed up and just zoned out looking at the clouds go by for a minute, it doesn't mean you're a loser. It doesn't mean you're an inveterate procrastinator. Forgive yourself. Those are the operative words. Forgive yourself, and you've got a fresh start. It's a reset. So anyway, that's the world's shortest course, a 5-minute little mini course on time management, gaining more control of your time, the concept of the voice and the four questions. Should you do the task? To what level of perfectionism? How could you make it more pleasant? And what's your first baby step? Being vigilant, in addition to those four questions, being vigilant for the moment of truth. And then when you screw up, and we all do, forgive yourself. Now, I will forgive you if you choose to call. If you've got a work-related problem, I do what I call workovers, especially if you're not sure what you want to do career-wise, what your next career step should be. Should it be self-employment? Should it be looking for a new job? Should it be staying put and trying to pivot or tweak your current job? Whatever your work problem, frankly, the more painful, the better, because then I feel like I can make a bigger difference. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as I've done lately, and people have liked this, I don't mind doing this. I'm happy to, I'll do this a little later because we've got calls coming in. So I'm just going to, I'm going to take the call right away and then I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Anyway, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Yeah. Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Hi. I actually saw you individually in your other world practice, not on the radio.
Right. Okay.
And
good.
What occurs to me, you know, I love listening to your show. I actually happen to think that you're pretty right on most of the time.
I hear it coming.
And so I have a suggestion.
Great.
For a future show.
Okay.
I would love to hear you have people like me and others who have engaged with you on the radio and listened to you and made major changes in their life and who would be willing to come on and talk about them.
Of course, whether, I love that.
You know, whether it's a work-related thing or somehow it affected their personal relationships, their family, in whatever form, that, you know, your work, your hard work, and your insights have moved them in their lives, that you bring them on, you know, I don't know, a panel of two or three or four people or whatever. I don't know how you can do it. I'm not a producer or whatever.
Right.
But anyway, that's my idea for Marty Nemko, 2.4.
It's a lovely idea. The reason I've been hesitant to do it in the past is although I'm not some hard leftist, I am very concerned about the commercialization of public radio. and that if I bring in my success stories, it can appear to some as though I'm trying to get more business, trying to get more clients. And I'm just very loath to do that because I'm, first of all, selfishly, because I'm blessed I have a full practice, but also I just don't want to give the appearance that my motivations are anything other than to help my listeners. But I will give that some more thought. But while we have you on the phone, do you want to share with us what something that you've either something that you've gotten from working with me, either as you said, either career-wise or personally, that maybe especially if it would be instructive to our listeners?
Well, that would be a long, long story because I'm now 64 years old, and I didn't do well in school. I did not enjoy school. I was severely dyslexic. That was part of it, I think, you know, looking back. But I went to school in Berkeley when UC Berkeley was very intimately connected with the Berkeley school system, and we had the benefit of, you know, brilliant educators and young people doing lots of testing. And in fact, I was moved to tears by recently seeing the movie, what is it called, in Identical Strangers?
I'm not familiar with it. What is that?
About the, it's a movie about three identical brothers, so three kids.
Triplets, yeah.
And they were divided up by a guy who was the head of the Freudian Institute of America, and he was running the program. And so they put these kids into different families intentionally, and the families were of different socioeconomic backgrounds. So they put one into a doctor's family, one into kind of a blue-collar family, and one into, let's say, something less than blue-collar.
Okay.
And then they came in and they measured them for years. They took videos of them. They interviewed them, and so on. So this movie came out, I think, maybe 6 or 8 months ago. I actually saw it on the airline. But it's called, I think it's called Identical Strangers.
So what was the upshot when they did that? Did they end up being very similar despite the different socioeconomic backgrounds?
Well, it was completely accidental that these three identical brother twins, triplets, found out about each other. So it was hidden, it was covered, and when they found out about each other, they were celebrated, and they were all over television. They were on the Donahue Show and all these other shows, and they opened a restaurant together in Manhattan, and they were fabulously successful until they started to realize the differences and started to look at themselves and each other. And the whole thing blew up, and one of them ended up committed suicide. It's a very sad story.
I'm going to interrupt you. So, two things. First of all, was the point that despite being genetically identical, that they really were very different people, despite the
Yes.
Okay.
They were actually, while they were very different in their own minds and their lives, they also shared things that were so, you know, they liked the same, they smoked the same cigarettes, they admired the same people, the same women, and so they were very much alike, but very different.
I'm going to interrupt you because it's getting a little off topic. So, but you were telling me this in the context of your story that UC Berkeley, UC went to Berkeley High School and then UC Berkeley and you had these great professors. Let's see if you can be really concise. Let's say you were in a job interview and you had to very quickly bring us up to speed on what happened, the major, major things in your career trajectory, and what you were trying to tell me what the major takeaways from our work together was.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you this, is that the major, major thing in terms of a failure, in terms of my education, that I'm looking back now on and saying, wow, it seems pretty obvious that while I was going to school, in all of these, whatever the class was, whatever, is that what I didn't understand is I needed a mentor.
Yeah.
I needed somebody who had traveled a path or was traveling a path or was aiming for something that was like what I wanted to do.
Absolutely. And you know what? You weren't unusual.
The fact that I didn't have that person after school, beyond my education, that I didn't have that relationship.
I'm going to stop you because you're right. This is taking a long time, and I'm concerned about my listeners. But you're not unique, whether you have dyslexia or not. Most people benefit inordinately from a mentor. And that's not just one mentor, but having one-on-one relationships with professional people, older or younger. Ages, we normally tend to think of mentorship as something that is somebody older. But it's like it could be somebody who is indeed who is following your path, who has followed your career path. It could be somebody from a completely other field, so to get a fresh perspective. I want to give you one more, give me one quick answer. What was the one beneficial takeaway from our work together that you would like to share with our listeners so that it might benefit them?
Well, you know, given that I haven't solved this yet, it's hard to say because I'm still in process. Because I think I saw you 6 years ago, and it's been a real struggle. I'm still struggling, but I must say that I still have a lot of hope, and I have aspirations.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to be interrupting you, not to be rude, but because I don't want to let you off the phone unless I can try to provide a little value. Tell me concisely what your struggle, where is your struggle right now, and let's see if I can help you take a baby step forward from here.
Oh, boy. I mean, my struggle is fundamental, and it's, so I'm on the brink of attempting to write something that I feel would be important for, you know, other people, the world, that they might value and learn something from that.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you again for interest of time.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody should write. Writing is excellent for self-discovery, for clarifying your thoughts, and just maybe to reach lots of people. But most writing doesn't reach lots of people, and you've implied that you haven't done a lot of writing before. So while I would absolutely encourage you to write, if you need income, I would urge you to view that either writing as something that would be a sample of the kind of thinking that you do that you want to share, but you've told me you've struggled lifelong with dyslexia. That might make writing difficult. I don't know. What's your reaction to what I just said?
Well, I think that's pretty good. I mean, I don't need income.
Okay.
What I need is I need fulfillment, and I need to feel like my life has meant something.
Absolutely, and we all do. So, if I, you know, normally, are you having trouble getting started, finishing? Do you have too much already written and can't distill it?
Oh, my life is all about not finishing.
Okay, great. So, not that that's great, but that targets us a problem. Does the wise man within you think that the wise that you should should you finish it? And if so, should you have a writing coach who you're accountable to every week? Should you have a co-author? Should you have an editor? What should you try to finish by talking into a recorder, into your phone, on using the Voice Memos app, saying in your own words what you'd want to say at the end? What does the wise man within you think you need to do? Should you finish it? And if so, what would help you do that?
The most difficult aspect of my life at this point, I'm kind of ashamed to admit it, is that I'm not sure that, frankly, people are worthy.
Let's assume that some are and some are not, but your life won't have any more meaning. You say you want meaning. If you write off humankind, you may be partly right and partly wrong, but it's not going to enhance your chances of making a difference. So let's agree that human beings are somewhere in the middle, and that it sounds like your writing, you told me that the writing is going to be a core component to your having more meaning. So write the damn thing. My question to you is, should you finish it? No, let's agree you should finish it. Should you hire somebody to finish it? Should you have a writing coach to make you accountable every week? What should you do?
Well, no, I don't think I need a coach. I've been to writing classes. I've I've written quite a bit, but mostly in the business platform and environment. And so getting to the point where the writing, I mean, you know, the writing world is fundamentally changed from 40 years ago.
It certainly has. But I got it. But what I'm going to ask you to do is when people have trouble writing something big, and I'll candidly say I do it myself, whenever I'm thinking I want to write a book about something, I start by writing an article, because that forces me to distill all of my diffuse thoughts into something concise and coherent. Then, having looked at that article, which is not such a daunting task, I can ask myself, in full honesty, is there a whole book in here? Or have I really gotten it out of my system by writing the article? Should you simply, you say you've been doing all this business writing or whatever, should you simply make the task simpler for starters and write a short article that says the essence of what you want to say?
Oh, and that's something that I love to hear you say, because I've been actually feeling that is the way. To get to the next step.
All right. So I'm going
to approach it as an essay and right. hope that I can find somebody who would want to publish that, because, of course, that's less challenging than a novel or a...
Great. So I'm not quite ready to let you go off yet, but I'm going to invite you, should you so choose, to be accountable by promising to have written a first draft of that article in the next week, and then to call back to the show, and no BS, for you to honestly tell all the people who are listening to this show and me whether you've written a first draft or not. Is that something you want to do, or is that you're not ready to do that yet?
I actually have the time. I'd be willing to do that, because I failed so many times. You know, what's risking one more time? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, I'll do that.
The worst
I'll
thing they can do is it doesn't get published. It doesn't even just take a shot. I write crappy first drafts all the time. I've written 3,500, you know, published articles in major publications, and every one of my first drafts suck. I normally go through 8 rereads and revisions before it's done. It is important to get a crappy first draft done. I'm not asking for a polished, publishable work. I'm asking you to write a crappy first draft. And it's infinitely easier to revise your way into excellence than to come up with it out of thin air. And so forgive yourself when it's not great. How does that feel to you?
Well, it feels daunting, but then again, I can call you next Thursday.
Cool. Now, I'm going to one more thing before I let you go, because I'm kind of a pit bull. If I put a gun to your head and I said, in one sentence, you have to tell me what this article is going to be about or its theme, what would the one sentence be?
Oh, man. That's tough, and, you know, that's part of my essential problem.
Do it. I don't want to hear excuses. What's one sentence?
You know,
Doesn't have to be perfect. Just tell me a sentence.
I don't know. Marty, it's... It's actually about what's going on right now. It's about political divisiveness. The story is an essay that's rooted, goes back to 1947 and the post-war occupation of Japan.
Okay, I'm going to stop you now. So if I said, okay, so you're going to talk, we're going to call the first draft, you're going to change the title, but we're going to call it The History of Divisiveness, 1947 to 2019. Is that a starting place?
Yeah.
There you go.
I agree.
Okay. That's a starting place. You may change it. But as I said, that may be a crappy first... What I just did is come up with a crappy first title, but it gets you started. And then you can always revise your way into excellence. So now you've got at least a first draft, possible theme or whatever. Start writing a crappy first draft, and I'll look forward to your call next Thursday.
Okay, Marty.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right.
You be well. Take care. All right, if you'd like me to torture you, feel free to give a call for what I call a workover. Whatever your work problem is like if you don't know what you want to, what career you'd like to pursue, or you're stuck in any way, any aspect of your job. This guy was he doesn't need money. He just wants to create meaning in his life, and he's got something he wants to write, and he thinks it's a book, but he can't make himself do it. There's all kinds of ways we're stuck. All that's required for this show, for this to be on topic, is it's got to be somehow related to work, that is productivity. If you have a work-related problem, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco is 415-841-4134. By the way, the next person to call will get a free autographed copy of my book, Careers for Dummies, which has profiles of 340 under-the-radar careers, and all kinds of advice on conquering procrastination, landing the job, succeeding on the job. So the first person, oh, the lines are already, all you got to do is give away something free and the lines will light up. Anyway, I'm not going to give out the phone number again. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. By the way, before we get started, if you want a copy of the book, just stay on the line after we finish our call and give your address to Joanne and I will send you the book. I am good at keeping my promises, okay?
Great.
Okay, cool. What gives me the honor of the call?
Yeah, hi. My name's Patrick. I'm a clinician at a mental health hospital. I also have a private practice, and I'm feeling like I need to either take a break from one of them or shift towards more of a private practice.
Can you, your sound quality is terrible. Is there a way you can sound better? Like to either talk closer to the phone, not be on speaker, or get into a better area or something because you're sounding terrible.
Yeah, okay. Is that better?
Excellent. You're the man. Okay. So I heard you say you had a mental health job and you were also doing private practice. You think you might want to move to more private practice. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I don't want to give up the benefits of the community at the hospital. It's a really great place to work.
Great. So what if we said what you really needed to do is just to get a few more clients in your private practice? Is that an accurate description of the problem?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. What's your specialty? What's your niche?
Working with adolescents.
Okay, and if there was a god, and the god or goddess was telling you this type of adolescent problem is what you were meant to help address, what's your real, what are you best at?
I think helping people who are, did you say within the category of depression?
Yes, within the category of adolescents.
Within adolescents, I would say depression, anxiety.
Great, okay, depression and anxiety. Both equal, or would the goddess say that you're really going to have the greater potential to be of help to people if you focus on anxiety or depression, or both? Are they equal?
I would say if it was one, it would be depression.
Great. So if I said that the goal now is to get more adolescents with depression, which of the following would be consistent with your personality as a way of getting more clients? Mm-hmm. Telling your colleagues, giving talks, writing articles, speaking to patient groups or family groups, which of those feel like you?
I would say patient or family groups, actually. I've enjoyed that.
Cool. So if I said we don't need to make life complicated for you, you love your job working in your community agency or whatever, you probably just need two or three or four more clients a week, and that'll get you some more money and get you some more pleasure out of doing that work that you say you're best at doing. And so I say all I want you to do is one a month. I want you to make a list of patient and family groups of who have depression. Prepare a really awesome short talk, leaving plenty of room for questions and answers, like five keys to helping your adolescent child with depression.
Okay.
How does that, if you think that idea sucks, great, tell me. If you think it's great, tell me. How do you really feel about doing that?
I actually like that idea. I've been trying to figure out ways that I could get myself out there and speak in front of groups, and a part of the thing that I'm contemplating is how to market myself with not having a big name right now.
Right. The secret to marketing is doing baby steps that are consistent with your personality. There are some people who would hate giving a talk. Those people should not do that. They may have a rich network, or they may like writing articles, or they may have two friends who are, colleagues who would refer people. But if you like the idea of if what resonated with you is giving talks, then go forth, my son, and give a talk.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Oh, by the way, yeah, stay on the line. If you want a copy of Careers for Dummies, you stay on the line, give Joanne your name and address, and I will, my way is to put it in the mail tomorrow.
Great. I appreciate it. Thanks, Marty.
Take care and be well. All right. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi, it's you.
Oh, hi, it's me.
It is you.
Okay. Hey, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was interested in your previous caller talking about trying to get that book out.
Right.
Or,
right.
You know, where, how to start, how to really make it happen.
Right.
I have a book in me that I've had in me for years, and it's really something, it's very, I've taken classes, you know, how to write that book, and it's really about, you know, kind of getting started. Also, in my career, I've been in a 30-year career, which is really something I've really never really been interested in, which is sad, right?
Yep.
As a bureaucrat. Mm. And at this point in my life, I want to make a change, a big change. I'm afraid to. And the change is I've been taking voice acting classes, and mm-hmm. that's something I really want to get into, but there's this fear that's holding me back.
With good reason. There's, you know, most voice, there's a person whose name will not be mentioned, who's one of the stars here at KALW, who is a fabulous voice actor and brilliant and kind and nice. I love the guy. He's fabulous. And he has to get up at 6 in the morning to get online, to find, go on these sites where they request people to do voice auditions, and he's making these auditions for no money, and then if they hire him, they give him $100. You know, it's a very, you know, I find that there are all these $10,000 voice courses, we'll help you make a demo tape, and we'll do all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it's really good for them to get the money, those voice schools, but 98% of them don't begin to make back even what they made in the, what they paid in the course. And so your fear, there are two kinds of fears. There's rational fear and irrational fear. I would love to play football for the Oakland Raiders, but I'm afraid I'd get my butt kicked, because that's a rational fear. So your fear about trying to make money from voice acting is a legitimate one. That doesn't mean you can't do it for fun. I've made 248, in addition to this radio show, I've made 248 YouTube videos. That gives me a chance to be a voice actor. I've done everything from play restaurant consultant to play the lead in Death of a Salesman, to give lectures on the meaning of life. Should you write your book, we'll talk about how to do that, but in terms of the voice mm-hmm. thing, do it for fun. That way you get to do all that cool voice stuff without risking having to eat cat food and ramen the rest of your life.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. So, yes, so the book is really something that I have. It's in me. It's just I just stop and start and then it never gets done.
Okay, let's talk. So, do you have a title or a theme for the book?
Imperfectly perfect.
Okay, and so is it about people who need to accept their imperfection? Is that what this is about?
It's really about life and the life I've experienced.
Okay, so it's autobiographical. And
Somewhat.
Say, it can even be semi, doesn't matter. But the normal next step would be two things. Since, is it a novel or is it actually a memoir, purely autobiographical?
I'm thinking more of a memoir.
Okay, great. What's needed then would be you start with a table of contents. And the way you do the table of contents is you go through your life from the first key conflictual incident that had a powerful mm-hmm. effect on you, and that's chapter one. You simply write that name, that incident, and you go through your life noting each of the major conflictual, in other words, where there was a big decision, some big conflict, some big problem, some key moment, something that had a powerful emotional component. You do that, mm-hmm. you go through your life carefully to make a list of all of those. That's your structure. That's your skeleton. That's your table of contents. Then mm-hmm. you start at chapter one. You start at the beginning, and you start slowly, patiently, as in your voice. Everybody's got a different voice. Whatever
right.
the voice you want to use, that's your human voice that represents you, you start slowly telling the story, asking yourself, is this detail interesting or boring? interesting or boring, one sentence at a time, just on chapter one. You're not thinking of the whole book. You're saying, I am writing the next sentence of chapter one, which is about the first core incident of your life. So let's say, I'm making it up. Let's say, what was the first emotionally rich, core, potentially conflictual incident of your life?
Finding out that I was adopted at age 13 when I went into foster care.
Perfect. So, great. So we start, you must set the stage. And usually the first sentence of a chapter has to be a grabber. So it should be an emotional thing. Like, I'm reading a book now, and I think the first sentence was he shot somebody in the woods. This is how. Mm-hmm. So that clearly gets... So starting with setting the stage with an emotionally powerful thing, it may be there was nothing scarier, or they walked me into the room to meet my new parents. Something, you don't need to use fancy language. You don't need long... You need to speak in your voice, but you're a storyteller. Now, is any of that useful to you, or is this stuff you've already done ad nauseum?
No, actually, you've just inspired me so much.
Okay.
So thank you. I like that. Thank you very much. And I will start to work on that. I appreciate that. Thank
awesome.
You.
Enjoy.
And I love listening to your show. I listen to it every week. I really enjoy it.
Thank you. A sentence at a time. Have your cup of coffee. Be in a comfy place. There is no rushing. Savor each sentence. Because as corny as this sounds, the joy and the benefits of writing a book, and I've written 12, the benefits come moment to moment in the process, not the seeing that moment where you finally see the book in print and you see the cover or whatever, or even you see the royalty statements if it happens, is trivial.
Mm-hmm.
Those are a moment. But you take a whole year or more to write a book. So you must derive the pleasure from each sentence, treating each sentence as a puzzle that you're trying to solve, or you're trying to say something beautifully or clearly or with emotional power or set the stage for the main event of that chapter. It's each sentence is a puzzle, and that's how you will get the most pleasure out of writing a book. Make sense?
Well, when it's done, I will dedicate it to you.
Cool. Well, just put me in the acknowledgments along with the people who really mattered in your life.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. You take care. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. I always make my first allegiance to you, dear listener. So let's go to the phones. Like one more call, then I got stuff I want to tell you. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Marty. This is Yash. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure, Yash.
This is my second time calling, by the way.
Okay.
I have a question for you. I am in transition. I'm actually quitting my previous job. And
You're mumbling a little bit. Please speak a little more clearly.
Hi. So I'm actually in transition. I'm leaving my previous employer and going to a new one.
Okay.
I had certain issues with my previous employer. That's why I'm deciding to change. And
now you're speaking a little closer to the phone. You're distorting. Can you pull back a little bit from the receiver because you're distorting? Just a little bit loud. Just
does that sound better?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes. So as I'm doing the transition, I also have certain trust issues with my previous employer and some stuff that my friends have warned me about. And I know that generally the non-compete is not enforceable in California, but this is my first time doing a transition here. They are asking me to sign something tomorrow. I'm not sure if I want to. Can they actually withhold my paycheck, or how can I actually talk to them saying that I don't necessarily want to sign it?
I think you should not be rushed, forced to sign. That sounds like something. You're right that generally non-competes are not enforceable, but there's always exceptions, and I am not a lawyer. I would advise you to do either of two things. We are blessed with a wonderful show here at KELW every Wednesday, I think it is 7:30, called Your Legal Rights.
Yeah.
And you can call and ask a lawyer that, or you certainly, whether it be if you're low income, a public interest lawyer, very often they're at libraries that give free legal services, or pay. It may well be worth spending a half hour or an hour consultation to find out, or you can call the state has a labor relations board or whatever, and finding out your rights. But because these situations tend to be subjective, And if we're, you know, I don't want you to live in terror that you're violating something where they can come back and get you. As I said, usually they are not enforceable. You are correct. But I wouldn't be rushing to sign it. I don't think they can withhold your pay because you need time to review the documents. That doesn't pass my smell test as a non-lawyer. I wouldn't immediately sign it. I would try to get it reviewed by somebody who seemed authoritative enough so that you can make a determine whether you should sign it, ask for revisions in the document, or not sign it at all and make some kind of a counterproposal. That's my non-legal intuition. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was looking for. I just don't want to actually get into anything. I just want to move on and hopefully get to a better team and better company. I just was hoping that I can actually just talk out of it rather than going for any legal stuff. So basically you're saying even if I say that I don't want to sign it at the moment, they cannot really hold my paycheck, correct?
It certainly does not pass my smell test that they're making you got to sign it now or you're not going to get paid. That seems to violate all kinds of laws in my judgment. Again, because I'm not a lawyer, but fortunately, you're in luck, dude. This coming Wednesday's your legal rights program is on, guess what topic? Employment law, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Okay. And they really do get a panel of real expert lawyers. So I can't think of a better way to get free advice. And you can thank KLW and maybe donate a few bucks during the upcoming membership drive. Okay. Okay. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Sometime do the poems again, please. I really enjoyed that.
The what?
The poems. You did some poetry.
I read some. That's sweet. I try to do all kinds of things. I try to bring my keyboard in at times. Thanks for asking about the poetry. Yes. I love that. That's sweet. I will try to keep things. I will keep that in mind. I do have this fat book called Poems Practical that has 375 poems and. There's color pictures in one edition. It's ridiculously expensive ripoff, not worth the money. But the black and white edition and the Kindle edition are cheap. The Kindle edition is like $2.99. That's really worth it. Anyway, but I digress. I'll let you go. Good luck. Don't capitulate prematurely to that employee. It sounds to this not legal mind that sounds utterly unfair. Downright illegal. Okay, you take care. All right, now, what I want to do is... I was reading the New York Times, and in the New York Times this week, Adam Grant, who I've quoted before, he is a business professor and psychology professor, I believe, at Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, and he writes frequently for the New York Times. And he wrote something that is really career-related that I thought was great. I love him because he doesn't, like so many career-related writers, he doesn't state the obvious. And I'm going to read you a little excerpt from what he wrote in the Times this week. Not long ago, I had dinner with an unusually charming friend. He entertained us with stories of Arctic adventures and captivated us with commentary on how the Game of Thrones could explain foreign affairs in real life. But I left that dinner with a nagging feeling that something was off. One of the other guests pinpointed the issue. In the more than 2 hours, he didn't ask a single question. A few weeks later, at dinner with another friend, I had deja vu. In 3 hours, she posed a grand total of zero questions. I might have expected that from a pair of self-absorbed narcissists, but neither friend fit the bill. On stage, these people are interesting. But in a small dinner, that same quality made him come across as uninteresting and uninterested. It wasn't because their social skills were weak. It was because they were misusing their greatest strength. Aristotle argued that virtues lie between deficiency and excess. And there is a growing body of evidence suggesting that success doesn't come from playing just to your strengths. It comes from playing to your strengths in the right situations. In an important study, managers were rated by over 1,500 of their coworkers. Ambitious managers tended to overdo decisiveness and underdo empowerment. Sensitive managers had the opposite problem. They were too encouraging and not forceful enough. Inquisitive managers overemphasized innovation and underemphasized results. and conscientious managers did the reverse. They were so busy trimming the weeds that they paid too little attention to the big picture. So, if one of your strengths is openness, remember there's a fine line between sharing and oversharing. If you have a flair for moxie and chutzpah, watch out for moments when you're imposing on others. And if you're a spellbinding storyteller, you need to ask whether a dinner time is the ideal time to keep performing. Confidence comes from recognizing your strengths, but true power depends on knowing when and how to use those strengths. In other words, really, it does come to moderation. But I thought that's really important. You know, we all remember the glad hand or the storyteller, whatever, but I think it's a really good example of less is more. Now I'll give out the phone number again. If you have a work-related problem and you don't know what you want to be when you grow up, even though you're already grown up, whether you're 16 or 76, is the key thing is you're unhappy in your work life or stuck, don't have a work life. I do what I call workarounds, as I've been doing earlier in the show, and I'm now ready to do one for you. If you have a work problem, the price is right, zero. Here at Work with Marty Nemco and KELW, the phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Now I want to tell you something I found on Quora. Quora is a wonderful website. Instead of having experts opine on everything, it's like regular people. And there was a Quora question, which was, what don't they tell you about getting a PhD in math? And it was answered, the most popular answer that was upvoted by 1,000 people, and for a kind of an esoteric, arcane topic like a PhD in math, to get 1,000 upvotes is impressive. It was this answer was created by Craig Miller, a PhD in mathematics at the University of Connecticut. Now at the University of Connecticut, he talks about how long he's been unemployed. He was unemployed. And here's what he wrote. You will find a lot of interviewers for jobs in the private industry at 1 minute congratulatory. Wow, you must be smart. And the next minute is like, but you don't have any experience in blah. And they would rather hire some 2.9 GPA bachelor's degree holder in computer science, took one course in that computer language, than hire someone much smarter who could easily learn it on their own. In my experience, most firms would rather hire someone with any experience and then fire them in 3 years when the language they knew became passé, rather than hire somebody who can adapt as an employee. He then continues to write, you're best off not even mentioning your graduate education on many resume submissions. Why? Some employers will actually use the overqualified label. They say they're worried you're too smart for such, quote, menial work. And as someone who just went through a long period of non-employment, you can be too educated to earn an income. He then said, if you plan to enter private industry, do yourself a favor and make sure you're, quote, up to date on modern skills. Make sure your computer science skills, for example, are in a popular language like Python. As an undergraduate, I did work in C and C++. By the time I left graduate school, that was seen as obsolete, almost like punch cards back in the 90s. He then writes, if you want to study pure mathematics, you know, algebra, topology, geometry, and therefore be bound to academia, be aware that it is very much a publish or perish world. You will need to be publishing papers at a rate of 3 or 4 a year for the next 6 years until you can apply for tenure. That's a lot. They'll say, oh, so you had one dissertation? Now do it 3 times a year. And if you manage just 1 or 2, you better be giving 3 or 4 talks at big conferences. And finally, he writes, don't worry, the NSA will hire you. He writes, BS. I know of only one mathematician, and she graduated within just 5 years with a PhD. Unless you graduate with honors or from a top school like a Princeton, Caltech, or MIT, or somewhere else, at least in the top 10, don't bother. So, you know, the real unvarnished truth is there simply are not enough jobs to go around, even for PhDs in mathematics. That is the problem, though. You know, I'm very confident about helping people solve individual problems in their work life. But the one problem I haven't solved, and I've had a who's who of experts on this show to address this question, what are we going to do about the lack of good jobs and the likely acceleration of the lack of good jobs? From a macro perspective, the best answer I've ever been able to come up with is that we have to stop being a materialistic society. There are not going to be enough good paying jobs. We cannot find our contentment from big houses, fancy cars, jewelry, fancy vacations. We must end up learning to live on little and living simply on finding our pleasure from creative outlets, meaningful work for its own sake, good relationships, and that is my best shot. It may not be the right answer. I don't know who the hell therefore is going to pay for all these little income earning people to pay for their housing, their health care, their transportation, their taxes in order to pay for school, public schools or whatever. So it's not a complete answer. But one of the things I do pride myself on is being really honest with you on this show, as I try to be in everything. And that's something that is the, maybe ultimately, the biggest problem facing the world. Not terrorism, not, oh, I don't know, you know, not the, even the budget deficit, although I think that's a huge issue. It's a bubble ready to explode. But I think the bigger, and concentration of wealth, I think, is not a great thing. It's a bad thing when the few big banks has too much of the wealth. But I think the biggest problem, and I don't think even the environment, you know, global warming, it exists and climate change exists, but I think far more likely to immediately, not immediately, over the next few decades, affect the world's peace is going to be the lack of good jobs and in turn the lack of ability to have even a modest quality of life. Okay, enough of that. Let me, I'll give one little quote that I really like. Arthur Schopenhauer, you know, when he found himself overwhelmed with worry about things like this, he wrote, I love this quote, "I've never known any trouble that an hour's worth of reading didn't assuage." I find that too. I get overwhelmed by life, just my own day-to-day life, which is a blessed life. It's a good life. But, you know, life is not easy, even for successful people, let alone if you're struggling. But a nice escape is reading. I find that that even TV watching, especially the news, is annoying to me, both because of its negativity, and I do feel manipulated a lot of the time when I'm watching news media. But if I'm reading something I've carefully chosen myself, I feel it's a lovely escape. And so, you know, reading is not considered cool these days. But I invite you to spend more time reading or listening to audiobooks, which I do in the car all the time, you know, especially related to your work life. That's not going to be controversial. It's not going to make you angry. It's not going to, you know, we live in angry times. I walk down the streets and I look between the people's eyes, the eyes, the windows to the soul, and I see anger. I see coldness, either coldness or anger so often in people. A good book, whether it be a novel or something really productive, like something that will help make you more secure or better at doing your job, can be, as Schopenhauer said, "I've never known any trouble that an hour's reading didn't assuage." Anyway, I'll give out the phone number again. If you have a work-related problem and you would like some help, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for what I call a workover, especially if you're looking for what career to do next or what self-employment to do next, or you want to run a self-employment idea by me, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If there's ever a word that's been, oh my God, all these lines lighted up, so I'm just going to tap dance here for a few seconds and we'll, those of you who don't know this, I deliberately do not screen calls. We take them exactly in the order received because I think that's consistent with KALW's very democratic values and ideals. So that if you call, you will, you know, it's whoever comes in order. No screener, nobody gets screened out. You know, certainly if somebody is long-winded or whatever, I'll interrupt, but, you know, you will get on. So, anyway, now we can get on. Let's get to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty.
Hello.
Hi. So, I'm calling because right now I'm working for a nonprofit, and I'm a temporary employee. They, you know, I haven't gotten hired full-time yet or permanently. And it's looking like I'm not going to be because it looks like they want, you know, they have to bargain with the agency that, you know, I came through, and I don't know if that's, you know, going to happen. And I recently got in contact, or someone contacted me from, you know, like a company that is more well-known. And they you know, pretty much want to bring me on board as long as I pass the process. And I'm just kind of stuck because I've met some, you know, pretty great people at this nonprofit, and I'm working with a director, and she doesn't know it, but I've actually consider her. She's like a mentor.
Mm-hmm. A very important thing to have. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, and it's something I've been looking for a long time. But also at the same time, there have been some things that have happened there that I feel like I'm kind of like, well, do they really want me here or not? Like, I don't know about just the quality of some of the people. Well, no, there's a lot of good people there. I'm just kind of stuck, and I...
Okay, let me ask you a couple of questions. Great. Now, this new job at this more well-known, there is a tone of your voice that implied you like that company, working for that company worse, either because you don't like the idea that it's a corporation or that particular corporation or the job. How are you really... tell me the specifics about what you like and don't like, other than it might be more permanent. There is no permanence anymore. Anybody can let you go. Tell me what you like and don't like about the company job versus this one, the current one,
okay,
at nonprofit.
Sure. So what I like about it is that it is, I'll be getting more money.
Okay.
Because I have the opportunity to earn money based on sales and how I do
A significant difference? Because after taxes, the differences tend to be trivial. Unless it's, you know, will the after-tax difference change your quality of life?
I don't know. I haven't looked into it.
Is it $10,000 or $20,000 more, that kind of thing? A year, I mean?
Could be, yeah. I would have to look into it, but...
let's say it was...
I'm playing. It's looking for...
Yeah, let's say we're playing. Let's say it was $12,000 a year, so after taxes, it's probably going to be about $7,000 net. With an extra $7,000 a year divided by 12, that's basically another, say, $600 a month. Would that change your life? $600 a month... or $700 a month, would that change your life?
No.
Okay, so let's put aside the money for now. It's a small factor. It's a little factor, but not a big one. Okay, how about, given that they're not that crazy about you, possibly, at your current job, are you more likely to be successful and therefore feel good about yourself and the work you're doing at the company or at this nonprofit?
The only reason I'm staying is because of the people... and I guess the tools that they give you to succeed, but the work that I'm doing, it's admin work, like administrative assistant.
Yeah.
The role is a regional manager, but it's actually just a support role. It's not, I don't see myself doing it for a long time. I'm not fulfilled in it.
Got it. I'm going to interrupt you because I'm looking at the clock. It's now 7:58. We've got to end. My take for you is what you need to do is, it sounds like you're likely to do better and maybe do something more important and make some more money in this company job. It may have more permanence, especially since this is a temp job and you're getting vibes that it isn't quite right. So based on the little time we have, I wouldn't necessarily say, you should take the corporate job, but I'd be leaning a little in that direction, and I'd invite you to simply make a pro and con list, okay? I'm sorry I got to cut you short, but the show's over.
No worries.
Okay, take care and be well. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover. Plus, Jonas Salk was a folk hero for inventing not just the polio vaccine, but the flu vaccine, yet his fellow scientists ostracized him. We're going to find out why when I talk with Charlotte Jacobs. I know her, and she's great. She is the author of Salk, which the New York Times called science writing at its best. Until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.